Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President, we thank you for subscribing. For investors who have a lower risk tolerance but still desire some exposure to the potential growth of the stock market, KPP Financial offers the Balanced Income Program. Steady yield for the risk averse. Take a look at the whole family of investing programs from KPP Financial. They're there for you to see when you want to on investtalk.com. Just click on the Investments tab. End of commercial. And now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday edition, May 10th, of InvestTalk, May 10th, 2016. According to a new study by the Insured Retirement Institute, more than 40% of people they surveyed said they had no retirement savings. And even the boomer generation, older generation, say they have less than $100,000 saved. That's those people who do actually have savings. So 40% don't have any, and those who said they did in the boomer generation have less than $100,000. To make matters worse, you realize we're living a lot longer, and medical costs are continuing to rise. There's issues working against the retired people, the baby boomers, you know, besides not having enough money. It's not a pretty picture. It really isn't. Now, one of the things we do during my portfolio checkups every month is access exactly what people are looking at and saving. What are they? When's their retirement? How much money do you have? How much do you need? Where are you going to live? Those kinds of things. You need some understanding of how much it's going to cost to survive in retirement. You know, with all these longer life expectations, you know, it's going to really strain your nest egg. Now, the good news is the concept of phased retirement is becoming more prevalent, which means, and I've been saying this, remember I talk about you retire from what you have to do, but you go do what you want to do, and that could include making money. You also don't have to retire all at one time. You can, you know, work a few days less a week, so you can ease into retirement, and that's becoming more and more popular and more received by employers. Now, of course, I help our clients talk about these kinds of things all the time. I mean, this is what I do consistently. And you do know, you know, when you do file for Social Security, if you retire early, 62, you know, you're going to get 30% less. If you wait till 66, full retirement age, you'll get that 30% more per month. If you wait till 70, it's another 30%+ per month. So, you know, you really got to consider that. And of course, the healthcare costs, you know, they're passing more costs to Social Security, you know, to the Medicare people. They're passing on more costs to them. It's not free. Everybody thinks, oh, it's all free. Not necessarily. It's mostly free, but there's a lot of restrictions and there's costs involved. It's not as simple as you might think. Now, there's some really good articles on the topic. You can go to investopedia.com, really good articles on retirement, you know, and how to prepare. Now, can we help with your decision-making today? I want to hear your questions. Let's check in now with the 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Yeah, this is Adam Thomas from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and listening to you on the podcast. When someone invests using a discount broker, I know the discount broker is covered with SIPC up to $500,000. Should an investor be concerned if they have more than $500,000 invested with one particular broker? And number two, maybe a scenario best explains my concern. If an investor, say, buys $1 million worth of Apple using a discount broker and the discount broker goes bankrupt, I thought the investor was buying the underlying stock. And it shouldn't matter what happens with a discount broker. So somewhere I'm confused. Please advise. Thank you.
Well, the last part is correct. And the first part is correct. If the discount broker is SIP insured, and now there's a word if there. You have to make sure he is. If the discount broker is SIPC insured, you're insured up to $500,000. If you had a $1 million account, Well, is there additional insurance? Most big brokerages, yes. The small guys, maybe not. You have to check with them. But companies like Fidelity and Schwab and, you know, almost Vanguard, almost all the big boys have more insurance than the SIPC limit. So it's the smaller ones you have to be concerned with, and make sure the smaller ones are SIPC insured. And the reason why it's $500,000, unlike a bank with, you know, the FIDC, FDIC, it's $250,000, is because you are holding stocks or funds. And those stocks and funds are still exist no matter what happens with the brokerage firm. Brokerage firm can go out of business, but you still own those. Those are yours. So they don't like, they're not going out of business, and you still own them. So, you know, there's layers of protection in that. Now, of course, if the stock stock goes bankrupt, yeah, you lose all your money. That's why you never put too much money in any one stock. But that's different than the brokerage firm that you're buying it, buying the stock through. They don't hold the stock. It's yours. I hope that's clear. Good question, though. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What investors know about fees? Next to nothing. A recent survey finds very few people are aware of what they are paying for fees for managed accounts. That's not unusual. Not unusual at all. So we're going to talk about that this hour. And that's going to be our main talking point. Is the Dow expensive? Is the Dow 30 stocks, the 30 largest stocks, are they expensive right now? I'm going to talk about some numbers, and we'll decide whether that is the case or not. Can gold go higher? I've talked about gold off and on. I'm not a big gold person, but I do. If it's an opportunity, I'll go wherever the opportunity is, and I think we have had an opportunity, and we've benefited greatly, knock on wood, here at KPP with gold. This year. Last year we got hurt with gold, but this year we're making up all that loss. Already done that. But is it going to go higher? Let's talk about the reasons why it could or could not. And did you see that Walmart is suing Visa regarding signatures on chip debit card transactions? It's a very interesting little story. I think we should talk about that. And I'm hoping to get to what I didn't get to yesterday, and that was income investments other than dividend stocks. I promise to get to that today. I really will. Today, the market was up pretty nicely. First biggest up day in 2 months. The Dow was up 222 points. The NASDAQ up 60. The S&P up 26. Pretty good move on the market. So, why did it move up big today? Gold kind of went up. Oil went up. There really wasn't any great news to make a market move. Maybe because everybody was over negative. Remember, was it last week I was talking about how just in the recent 2 weeks, I was talking about last week, the people got very negative on the market all of a sudden. Too much so. Too fast. Too fast. So this could be what we call a dead cow bounce. Or do you think it's a change in direction and the market's going to rally? My personal belief is I doubt it. There's no reason to. Earnings weren't up. Sales aren't up. You know, what's the catalyst to make prices go up? So I wouldn't take to heart today's move up too much. I wouldn't get too excited about it at this point. If it does this for a number of days in a row, maybe so. But let's just stay calm and keep our powder dry. You're listening to Invest Talk. A reminder to take advantage of those catch-up provisions. All baby boomers have the opportunity to not only max out their IRA and 401 contributions, but they can also put extra money into those contributions right now. At a certain age, you can put extra, I think it's $5,000. If you have a question about that, let's hear from you. I welcome your call, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, this is John from Phoenix. I love your guys' show. I noticed that the SPY since last summer keeps making lower highs and lower lows. And I noticed that the lowest low now is 1,800 or 180-something. So I bought the VIX, VXY, and I'm trying to hedge the loss. I was wondering where I should put the stop at the VIX. Why should I put it if it breaks through the SPY high, all-time high, or should I actually have a stop on it somewhere else? I look forward to hearing your response. Thank you.
Okay. He said he'd buy the VIX because the S&P 500 has lower high, so he's anticipating them to go down and that the VIX will go up. But I want to warn you that the VIX is a volatility index, that doesn't necessarily match the S&P 500. Don't necessarily assume that if the S&P 500 goes down, the VIX will automatically go up. Remember what the VIX is. The VIX is a relationship between the puts and the calls. Puts and calls, and the more fear in the market, usually it goes up. The less fear, it goes down. So that's why it is related to the S&P 500, but it's not perfectly correlated there. You can't just assume that the VIX will go up if the market goes down. It's just that's not how it works. But it is a decent hedge, meaning that even though it's not a perfect hedge with the S&P 500, it generally goes up when the market goes down. But I'll warn you, the VIX also spikes up and it spikes down. So you're going to have to be quick as a trade. If the market goes down sharply and the VIX goes up sharply, the market can then slowly go down more, but the VIX will come back down. It won't keep going up necessarily because it tends to spike. Take a look at the chart. You don't have to believe me. Just take a look at the chart of the VIX and you'll see what I'm talking about. Compare that, overlay that with the S&P 500 over the last few years. Go back to 2008. You'll see it. So, I mean, you know, the market went up today, right? So the VIX went down. Because remember, it goes opposite direction. Not perfectly correlated, but pretty close correlated. So the VIX went down 6.4%. The market only went up, 1.5%. See, it's not perfect. It can be very volatile compared to that. So just be aware of that. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Fees. This is something I've talked about ad nauseum. I'm sure people know what my feelings are. You have to know how your broker gets paid, or your money manager, your registered investment advisor, your certified financial planner. How do they get paid? It's critical. How do they get paid and how much they get paid? And we've talked forever about loaded funds and avoid the loads and look at the mutual funds and what's their expense ratios inside there. Is there 12B1 fees paid to the person who sold you the mutual fund? And there has been recent law that's being passed by the Department of Labor, which helps this situation by requiring certain disclosures, by also requiring that whoever's selling you the product has to sell it to you with that product being the best available as opposed to just being suitable. So that means they have to consider costs. That means you might see loaded funds disappear. Schwab is no longer going to be selling loaded funds. You know that? So that's the first step you see of that changing. And it's a good change. It's really a good change. So you want to know how your money manager needs to get paid. There's no doubt about that. But I just think it should be disclosed more clearly than it ever has. And I don't have to worry about the Department of Labor because I buy the same thing for myself as I do for my clients at the same prices in the various programs. So it doesn't affect me. This is InvestTalk. Your own personal capacity for risk taken in is a must know. You need to know how much risk you want to take. Go to our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. Take the little questionnaire. 888-99-CHART. Okay, we're here for you. Beginner experienced investors are always welcome. 888-99-CHART. If you're a podcast listener and you can't reach us during our live program, and remember, we're live 4-5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, you still can record your question anytime you want on the same number, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. I'm a podcast listener. Just calling to get your opinion on Eaton Corporation, symbol ETN. Just wondering if you thought it was fairly valued at this price or undervalue or where you think it might go in the future. I will listen on podcast. Thank you very much.
Eaton Corporation, it is out of Ireland, believe it or not, provides electrical power and control equipment, hydraulic systems, truck and drivetrain, and aerospace pneumatic systems. It's a $28 billion company, so it's pretty good size. I think it's fairly valued right about where it is, about $62. That's about a 15 PE. Okay, and that's an average market PE over any length of time. This particular company's five-year PE range is 8 to 22, so it's not on the lower part of the, it's right in the middle, right in the middle. Good, solid company, decent return on equity, not a lot of debt, pays a 3.7% dividend. It's a blue-chip, solid company. It is cyclical because of what it does. Remember, it provides electrical power, control equipment, hydraulic systems, truck drivetrains, aerospace. So if the economy tanks, this stock will tank with it. It's pretty easy to know that because of what they do. So it's really fairly valued where it is. It's hitting a lot of resistance at $63, and it's at $62.10 now. This is not where you'd want to buy it. You either want to buy it when it breaks through, and then you don't know where it's going to go, or you wait for a nice big pullback. It was 47 back in January. So I'd wait. It would not be on my list to buy at this point. Nice dividend. If it's a blue-chip stock you're looking for, this should be maybe on your radar. Blue-chip stock paying a nice dividend. Eaton Corporation, ETN is the symbol. 888-99 chart, is the Dow expensive? And we know what's going on. The earnings for the Dow peaked in 2013. Sales peaked actually the year before. Okay, so it's really amazing. Earnings have declined 21% from its peak. And sales are down 25% since its peak. And what's the Dow up? 33% since 2012, fourth quarter. So the Dow went up when these earnings and sales started to go down. So now the Dow for almost a year has gone sideways. We know that, right? So what is the PE today? It's about 14. What will it be based on going forward earnings estimate? About 16. What's the PE ratio normally for the Dow? For the Dow, not the S&P 500, the Dow. It's about 14. So is it overvalued? For me, it looks overvalued. Why do I say that when the numbers aren't that out of line? Because the E and the sales have not turned around yet. Until they turn around, can you project higher growth going forward? And the E estimates going forward are up like 9%. But for every quarter for the last almost 2 years, the estimates have been wrong on the upside. They've always been worse. So I am not convinced. I think the market's overvalued. If you look at the S&P, it's even worse. It's more like 18 PE instead of 15. So I think it's overvalued. Now, it's not crazily overvalued, but I think it's overvalued. Let's go to BJ in Fremont. How you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good. Thanks, Steve, for taking the call.
Thank you.
I have a question about Post Holdings.
Okay.
POST. What do you think the long-term outlook for this stock is?
Long-term, it's going to be a solid earnings company. It is not cyclical. It's anti-cyclical. Post Holdings, everybody, makes cereal. Okay, they make ready-to-eat cereals under the honey bunches of oats, pebbles, grape grains, and grape nuts brand names. It's a very solid company that makes money even during recessions because people have to eat, and they eat cereal. Sales growth is pretty darn good. It's about 15% to 20% in the last four quarters, just very consistently growing their sales. Now, you got to be careful. You make sure they're not growing it by use of purchasing companies, because that's not necessarily a good idea. Sales are, earnings are growing too. So it might be that they bought some companies and that's how they're getting. Because you can't really look at 2016 earnings with growth of 500% and believe that that's going to continue. More like 7%. But it is overpriced. You're going to make $2.43 and a 77 price. That's really pretty darn expensive. That's like 30 PE. I would wait for a pullback. It's a great company, but it's a big blue chip company you want to buy when it's on sale. Okay, BJ, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. We're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. You can see my portfolio check updates on investtalk.com. I'm going to be in San Ramon tomorrow, May 11th. Still got a slot or two open. If not, that's okay. I get to come home early. And then San Jose on May 25th. So to reserve your spot for an hour of these informal meetings, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab.
We thank you for subscribing. If you'd like to take Steve up on his offer, it's really pretty easy. He meets with a limited number of our podcast subscribers on Skype and telephone. This is a way to benefit from his expertise, get a view of your retirement portfolio, and give you some ideas if you'd like. It can be a very educational hour. To set up a time, go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab, and then Portfolio Review. We continue with this Tuesday, May 10th, Invest Talk. Why not share your investing journey with us? We'd love to hear about your investment choices, lessons learned. Call and join the conversation. 888-99-CHART. And remember, between programs, you can send us a text at the same number, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Frank in San Mateo. How you doing, Frank?
I'm doing good, Steve. Hey, got a question for you. I went to a seminar. I want your opinion on it, or second opinion on it. It has to do with a Roth IRA. Okay. I've got funds in a Roth, and they're explaining that I can convert what I have in there into a trust or some kind of a mutual fund that you buy into a percentage with your money into this fund, and it buys, normally it buys shopping centers, and you're a small percentage of that, and then you get like maybe 6% each month payment of some sort.
Are they trying?
I just wonder what you thought about it.
Is this a limited partnership they're trying to talk into? Or is this a...
It may be.
Okay, if it's a limited partnership that they want you to get into with the shopping centers, I would say no, do not do it. Because as a limited partner, you are part owner of that partnership, and the general partner can steal all the money, borrow against the assets, steal all the money, and you'd be responsible for your share of that little piece of the loan they borrowed as income to you, and you never got it. If it's a REIT, a real estate investment trust, which is a publicly traded REIT, then I have no problems with it. If it's a REIT, but if it's a private REIT where you're a limited partner, problems. If it's a public REIT traded on the exchange, much less problems. I don't have a problem with that. So remember, and you're confusing, a Roth is a vehicle. It's a retirement vehicle, like a regular IRA or an account. And what you buy with the money in there is what you're investing in. So you have a Roth, and they want you to use that Roth and buy this particular asset that they're trying to talk you into. If you want me to look it up more specifically, you got to send me if it's a publicly traded REIT, you can just send that to me in an email, and I'll check it out for you. But if it's a limited partnership, go ahead.
Yeah, one thing that they did spin off of that, I'm getting a little confused on it, but it was you also can do an 1031 exchange into the Roth of some sort and then do that or something. I got to get confused about that, but it sounded pretty good from what you could do.
No, I have a feeling that's trouble. If when you're talking about a 1031 exchange and you can do a 1031 exchange, that's not a publicly traded REIT, I can tell you that. That's a 1031 exchange is where you sell one property for another and you don't have to pay the capital gains tax. Okay, that's what a
1031 exchange into the Roth. Then you can do it, but you're probably taxed on it at that point.
It doesn't sound right to me, Frank. Something's not right. You need to talk to an accountant because that doesn't sound right to me. That does not sound right. Be very, very careful with that.
Okay.
I just think it's something that's pretty complex and, you know, it doesn't sound like something you should really get yourself involved with myself personally. Thanks, Frank. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Bob in San Francisco. How you doing, Bob?
How you doing, Steve? I admire the advice you give, and I just heard the advice to the previous caller.
Yeah, it does.
Great advice. I follow you 100%
yeah,
on that.
It doesn't sound good to me. It doesn't.
No, yeah, I agree. Anyway, I've got two ETFs that I just want to just bounce off you to see if they're worthwhile or not.
Okay.
One is XAR, which is a Spider S&P Aerospace and Defense.
XAR.
And the other one is XAR.
Okay.
It's a symbol for.
Okay, so
and
that.
I buy is the other one, and I just wondered what your take is on either one of those.
What was the second one?
I buy. It's a fairly new ETF. It's got Amazon. It's got the.
Is it
IBUY?
IBUY.
Yeah.
Okay. That one's the ETF Seek Investment Results corresponding to the performance of the EQM Online Retail Index. So that probably has it's really brand new. Do you know what's in it? That's what I would do first, Bob, is, okay, well what's in this thing? And I have a feeling it should be pretty full of, there should be a lot of Amazon, because remember it's...
Absolutely, yeah. It's got Amazon and it's got the stamps.com or two of them. Mm-hmm. But they have quite a few of the... They're all online companies which are taking all the business away from the brick-and-mortar stores.
Yeah, so you would think that would be a decent play because they are taking all the business away from brick-and-mortar stores. But it's so brand new, it's pretty difficult to know. I like the concept, Bob.
Uh-huh.
I like the concept. Just not sure. If it was me, I'd be looking at all the holdings and see if there's a lot of, see if it's all good stuff. Because sometimes these ETFs fill themselves up with really poor quality companies because they want to have enough of them, you know, 50 or 100. Do you know how many companies are in this thing? It's tracking an online index of some kind.
I think it has around 50 in it.
Yeah, so that's not too many where you can take a quick look at almost every one of those and decide, you know, what percentage. The other one the aerospace, I like that area. I think, you know, we're coming up on a presidential election, and if we get a Republican in there, they'll be more inclined to spend on defense spending. If Hillary gets elected, then there'll be less inclined. So you got a political thing to think about when you're buying that. Yeah, so I might want to wait a little bit on that one just to see how the politics play out a little.
Okay, thanks a lot for the advice. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Bob. I appreciate that. I really do. Can gold go higher? Yeah, I've had a lot of calls on gold. And when everybody gets really excited about gold, I get kind of turned off. Last year, everybody hated it, kind of liked gold. And now people are getting more and more, you know, upbeat about gold. Well, so you look at it, and of course the dollar, the strength of the dollar is related to gold prices, and we know that. If dollar gets stronger, gold goes down, generally speaking. The dollar gets weaker, the gold goes up. But if you notice, gold went up today. Gold went up, and so did the dollar. So it doesn't not necessarily be a perfect marriage together. Some of the other things that we know will affect it is what's going on in the economy, in our economy, the rest of the world economy. And it's hard for me to see gold going down when we have negative interest rates, when many parts of the world are still... issue, it's still involved with quantitative easing. everybody is still having that currency war, trying to get their currency to be worth less and less and less. All that is very bullish for gold. And then you throw in U.S. debt, the massive corporate debt, and the lack of sales and earnings for the last year or two. It's hard to say gold should go down. It should go up with this background, you would think. So I'm going to say I think gold, yeah, still has a way to go. I think it does. And both in the shorter term and the longer term, I think. I'm, you know, it sounds like I'm a gold person, and I'm not. But I think it's an opportunity that you don't pass up opportunities. You just don't. Maybe you're wondering about the saleability of your home right now. It might be smart for you to downsize right now. Justin Klein and along with Chevy Atkinson, who heads up an award-winning realtor team, will be offering real estate reviews by Skype or telephone this week on May 12th, day after tomorrow. That's Thursday. To reserve your time, just click on Contact Justin and write Real Estate Review on InvestTalk.com.
Have you been meaning to do it? To get a professional opinion about your retirement accounts? Take Steve up on his offer. He'll be in San Ramon this week, May 11th, and San Jose, May 25th, for these individual one-hour informal meetings. For podcast listeners and others out of reach of our California offices, you can meet with Steve via Skype and telephone. To schedule your time, just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
Yeah, this is Adam Thomas from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and listening to you on the podcast. When someone invests using a discount broker...
Yeah, this is Don from Endicott, New York. I'm a podcast listener. I have a question. I find myself trying to look at an ETF the same as I do a regular stock. Could you please explain how to analyze an ETF as opposed to a regular stock? How would you look at that and look at its value and if you want to invest in it? Because I find myself trying to look at it as a single stock, and I know I should do that. So could you please explain the difference on how to evaluate those two? Thank you. Bye-bye.
On a chart, when you're reading charts, it's pretty much the same because you're just reading the movement of the price of the equity, either it's individual stock or the ETF. But on the fundamentals, it's vastly different. An individual stock is just one stock that you have to analyze. In an ETF, you have to analyze all the stocks or a majority of the holdings that they have. And it also has a lot more to do with the sector it's in, if it's a sector ETF, than it does with the individual stock. So you have to kind of, it makes it even a little bit more difficult because not only do you need to analyze all the stocks or many of the stocks are the holdings in the ETF, but also of the whole index, because usually ETFs are tracking indexes or sub-indexes or slices and slivers of the market or currencies or commodities. It's something that they're tracking. And so you have to analyze that particular part of the market, which is can be more difficult. An individual stock, you're just looking at the fundamentals of that one company. You really should know the background of the sector as well, but you're really more focused on that one company. ETF, you're focused on a number of stocks. And what I really look at when I look at an ETF of that I'm going to buy, I like to look at the weaker holdings because they could pull it down. I mean, they're going to probably have the strong holdings, but they also have a number of holdings, so you want to look at the weaker ones as well and how much they have invested in those and how much will it affect the ETF when they got a certain percentage of their stocks that are very, very weak. Why do I want to own those? So yeah, it's very different. It's not like you can't compare looking at a stock with looking at an ETF because it's very, very different. Maybe you're wondering about the saleability of it. Oh, I already did that, didn't I? We're doing double stuff. I don't want to do that. Yesterday, I tried to get to the income investments other than dividend paying stocks. So today, I'm going to make sure I get to them. Okay. You can invest in banks, CDs, and savings account. We know that you can do that. It's not very good. But in the incredible, There's a bank called Incredible Bank. It's an online bank, and their savings deposit is 1.2%. That's pretty darn good. You can go to bankrate.com and try to find banks that pay the highest rate. Number two, you can use municipal bonds. Municipal bonds. You can do short-term municipal bonds, long-term, but they are income-producing. You can use corporate bonds. You might get higher rates in corporate bonds because municipal bonds are double tax rate, tax-free, double tax. Not state or federal taxes are owed on any of that. So if you buy municipal bonds, you're going to get a lower return, but you don't have to pay taxes on that money. Corporate bonds, you do. You'll get a higher return. We just talked about REITs, real estate investment trusts. You can usually get 4 to 8% return, fairly consistently. But as always, when you get a higher return, you have higher risk. Municipal bonds, low return, lower risk. Corporate bonds, higher rate risk than municipals, but lower risk than REITs, so they pay less. 3 to 7%, where REITs can pay 4 to 8%. Foreign bonds, you can consider foreign bonds. I wouldn't buy them individually, but maybe in a bond fund. This has its own problems. Preferred stocks, preferred. They kind of act like bonds. You can get a good return, 4 to 7%. How about high yield bonds? Now you're talking about more risk, but you can get more return. And then master limited partnerships. All these are income producing equities. And it's going from the lowest risk and increasing more and more and more risk as they go on. Municipal bonds, corporate bonds, REITs. And there's a big jump in the risk between bonds and REITs. Okay, it's a big jump in risk. Preferred stocks, not as much of a risk as, if you buy a big blue chip preferred, that risk is fairly minimal, but it is the risk of that underlying company. Make sure that underlying company is good. We're all trying to get returns. We're all trying to get income. We're all trying to do that. You just can't get very much with CDs and savings accounts these days. So you have to reach for it. But remember, the further you're reaching out there, the riskier it gets. I'm worried that a lot of people and understand the risks that they're taking when they're talking about, I'm getting 6% dividend yield or 6% yield. Well, how much risk you have to have lots of risk to get that. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. If you still have a question, well, we still have time. 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Coming up on Invest Talk, answers to your questions. Any money matter? Comparing load and no load mutual funds. How to gauge your needs in retirement. 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Rick in Antioch. How you doing, Rick?
I'm doing okay. All right. Could be better.
Well, okay. You had a question?
Yeah, I bought a CRC a while ago at like $250 a share. Uh-huh. And I have some profits, some long term. And I'm just curious whether or not if I should just take the loss now or if I should hold out.
Well, this is a CRC, everybody, California Resources. It's a microcap company worth about $652 million. It's not a penny stock. I won't call it a penny stock, but it's a very low price stock at $1.68. And the reason why is it's not making any money. It's not going to make money in this year. It's going to lose 72 cents a share. And it's going to lose less money next year, 10 cents a share. The thing it has going through it is it does have lots of sales, $300 million worth of sales in the most recent quarter. The problem with that is that's down from $1 billion in sales 2 years ago, and probably because it engaged exploration in oil production and gas exclusively in California. That's a pretty tough call. California is very, very difficult to get any rights to explore for oil and gas. They just, They're very sensitive about that. So, it's a roll of the dice, Rick. This is a roll of the dice. It could go back up to, you know, $3-$4, but my gut feel, I would not be a buyer of this stock because it just doesn't make money, and I don't like that it's in California. I don't see a lot of upside potential here because they're losing more money. So I would probably get out. But, Rick, if oil and natural gas prices keep going up like they've been, this company could shoot up, you know, 100%, going from $160 to $3 a share, $1.60 to $3. I mean, it could easily do that, but it also could easily go back to where it was at about 35 cents. Yeah. So I would probably get out myself. I wouldn't probably hang in there, Rick. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Remember, I don't like buying stocks that don't make money. When something doesn't make money, I just have a hard time wanting to own it or buy it or get involved. Now, unless you're willing to take a huge risk on something like that. Let's go to George in San Jose. How you doing, George?
Fine, Steve. Thank you so much. I want to make a compliment to you and Justin for Seagate Technology. I called not a long time ago. The stock was 27, 28. You and Justin said you can consider it around 20, but make sure you have a stop on 18. Now, a stock is a little over 19, already went 18 and 70 cents, but they are still paying more than 13% dividends. Is this a good time to go? And I listened from the radio.
Okay. I doubt that they will continue a 13% dividend. I doubt that they will continue that because they have lots of debt and their sales are going down. I can't imagine them maintaining that dividend at this level. They're going to make $1.71 this year after making $4.57 last year. But then they're going to rebound $1.95 in 2017. That's what they are saying. That's what the estimates are. It's a fairly low price stock at $19.25. So it looks like it should try to hold that $18, $19 area. If you own it, it breaks below 18, you just got to leave because something's not right. If it holds in that area, then I would hold the stock. I wouldn't buy it unless it starts to recover. That's for sure. STX, Seagate Technology, everybody knows who they manufacture hard disk drives for the enterprise, desktop, mobile computing. It's a tough call on Seagate because the sales have been so poor. They kind of turn it around. They got to turn around by getting the sales have to be turned around, or else they're going to be toast. You can't continue this path that they're on. Just can't. Our time is up. If you have a question you want to ask me directly, you're welcome to send me a note, and I will get back to you. I promise. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. Also, I'll be in San Ramon tomorrow, May 11th. I do have an opening. If you want to meet with me to reserve a spot. It's a one-hour informal meeting about your retirement portfolio. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then portfolio review. Hopefully we can get you in if you want to get in. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today, and we'll do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.